Hey, thank you to Helix for sponsoring this podcast. Adam has had his Helix mattress for almost a year now, and he's loving it. It's actually hard to get him up. In fact, he won't stop talking about it. You'll understand what we mean when he goes into detail. Thank you for the detail, Adam. Later on the episode, but for now, we want to tell our listeners about a special deal going on. Our Sleepy Time Pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and, as if that's not enough, two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula. This is their best offer yet, and I'll bet it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paula, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming to you live from the Ray Horseman Studio in North Hollywood, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, voting. Abraham Lincoln said, "Elections belong to the people. It's their decision. If they decide to turn their back on the fire and burn their behinds, then they will just have to sit on their blisters." Ouch. It's been a little uncomfortable sitting down since 2016, but Franita Tolson, Vice Dean and Professor of Law at USC's Gould School of Law, is here to talk about how voting works, who tries to stop voters, and exactly what are superdelegates anyway. Plus, we debut the new hit song, The Ballad of Captain Culpepper, and Paula visits Florida. We hope you vote to stay tuned. I'm Adam Felber, the guy who tries to keep the bubbles on this show's conversational ballot filled in completely. And now, please welcome the woman who is always leaving a topical hanging chad, Paula Poundstone!
Yay!
Welcome, Paula Poundstone.
Well, thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
It's really good to have you. And it's
Miranda
good to have...
Miranda Street once again.
Miranda Street. Yeah, on beautiful Miranda Street. I believe this neighborhood is on the upswing, by the way. I can tell you why later. But we have our house band guitarist, Harry Orlove.
Nice job, Harry. Thank you
Come
for being
on,
here.
Come on, Harry.
Harry Woo-hoo! Is... Harry's never been our house band before, but he has made an appearance on the show. We can explore that a little later.
He's been hanging around. He's been lurking about just outside.
Over in Fetter's Appliance Store. Now, Paula, I understand you visited...
I just got back from Florida.
You just got back from Florida.
I was working in Florida.
Okay.
So I go into my hotel room in, I think it was Orlando.
I think so, too.
58 degrees in the hotel room.
In the hotel room.
With air conditioning. They put the air conditioning. 58 degrees.
Yikes.
If it was that cold outside in the wintertime, they would put the heat on. Florida is a major part of the problem.
What problem?
The overusing things. The wasting electricity.
Okay.
Yeah. 58 degrees.
Okay.
And a lot of people that live in Florida move there because they're wussy and they didn't want to live in the cold. But then they go to Florida and they feel so guilty that right. they make themselves cold inside as well.
I got to say, 58 degrees in a hotel room sounds like human error. It doesn't sound like anybody really wants 58-degree hotel rooms.
No, you know what? There's
like,
a thing about
David
Florida.
Letterman.
This is the thing about Florida. Even in the, you know, in the heat of summer, you always have to bring a jacket wherever you go.
Is this
because
true?
If you, yes, because if you go inside, it is freezing. No, that's a Florida thing.
That's a thing.
It's a thing. I don't know.
But Florida is full of old people who are always cold.
Exactly. This is my point.
Maybe they just want to be able to wear their shawls.
I guess. A lot of it's because there's a big push to crochet there.
Crochet, yeah.
Yeah, that's part
right,
of the
right. They start turning up the thermostat. It rips the soul out of the crochet industry.
I was in three different...
Florida's owned by Big Crochet.
Big Crochet is taking over
Florida.
I'm
sorry, you were saying...
I was in three different cities in Florida, and I performing on stage, telling my little jokes, and I didn't want to hurt their feelings, but I finally just blurted out, you live on a peninsula. You're going to be the first to go.
They have
no sense.
Right. Did anybody get up and leave?
No, but there was some quiet weeping I could hear from the back.
I mean, they must
it's
know that.
It's a horrible place to live. I don't know why anybody would live there. There's alligators. First of all, you know, it rains every day in Florida.
Yeah.
It rains like at about 5 o'clock. It pours rain.
Just by the
so
way you're
hard.
The way you're shit talking right now, I'm guessing you don't have any upcoming gigs in Florida.
She does.
Sorry.
Well,
Captain
alligators.
Crinkle just told me that you have a gig coming up in Florida. You sure
oh,
you want to go here?
Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Florida has a great sense of humor about themselves.
Okay, great.
Besides which, they'll be drowned by the time I get there.
Okay.
It rains about 5 o'clock every day, and it pours rain so hard that the alligators in the gully on one side of the highway float up and over to the gully on the other side. They have
That's
alligators.
Not true.
Yes, it is.
They don't float out of the
big,
gullies.
I know,
you don't have to make alligator stuff.
Big,
I get it. Speaking of exotic animals.
They don't even go row, row. You can't even fucking hear them coming.
Yeah,
they're just
they're silent.
Maybe a little clicking on the tile in the kitchen.
Speaking of exotic animals.
They go, did you know that some idiot released pythons in the Everglades?
Okay.
They're not.
I did read about this.
It's not a native species.
Right.
So, but
it's an invasive species.
So then the pythons procreated. I don't know. I guess they released a male and a female, but they procreated. And now there's tons of pythons in the Everglades, and they are paying just regular citizens, just like stay at home moms. To go...
Kill pythons. Yeah, I read about that.
To make ends meet.
Well, why don't you just... I think the pythons could help take care of the alligator problem.
No, I don't think...
You don't think so? And then it's time to unleash the dinosaurs.
I'm not sure who would win in a battle.
I don't know, but you know who would know?
Alligator.
Not only our resident exotic animal specialist, but turns out he's from the state of Florida and has been quietly weeping in the corner this whole time.
Oh, is that true?
Anthony Alfaro.
Anthony, what do you know about who would win, an alligator or a python? Hold on, Anthony's coming over, and I hope that's not a python in your
first
pocket.
First, we want to know who would win in a battle of words.
Well, I want to start and say I take great offense to a lot of the things you just said.
Yeah, you really don't get to. But but who would win in an alligator python face-off?
It depends. Are we talking about in water or out of water?
Oh,
in
that's
water.
A good question.
There, we got swamps.
In water, okay.
Swamps, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everglades.
Yeah.
I'd say the alligator.
Okay.
Yeah,
I really would.
I would too. Yeah. But the other thing is, with those snakes, man, you can cut them right in half and then they just keep going.
That's earthworms.
Yeah.
No, it's also...
Anthony?
Well, it's rattlesnakes. Rattlesnakes, you cut the head off and the head just keeps snapping
that's
for a little
not,
while.
Well, maybe, yeah.
Yes, that's true. That's like yes, it is.
Chickens do too.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of animals do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, okay, and this is one of the animals that does it.
Thank you, Florida expert Anthony Alfaro. Where in Florida are you from, Anthony?
I'm from Miami.
Oh, Miami.
So
that's
probably like a special little nook of
Florida. Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, visit your relative soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they're not going to be there for long unless
mom.
People in Florida need to invest in floaties and barges.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'm going to work next week on a barge. That's the new club that I'm...
You're not going to play on a barge.
I'm going to work on
a barge. Well, let's hear it for Anthony, though.
Thank you very much,
he was willing
Anthony.
To step up
I appreciate
and take
you,
some Florida heat.
You come... Get your mom off the peninsula, Anthony.
See, I was in Orlando just like a year ago or two for Wait, Don't Tell Me. I don't remember being that cold there.
It's cold inside.
That's
Adam.
What I mean.
This is
I don't remember
point.
Being
it's
that cold inside.
Inside.
No, I heard
it
your
is. They
I
put
do
on too much
to
air conditioning. They're wasters there.
Oh, they are wasters.
Yeah.
They're messing up that whole don't waste things thing.
Yeah. It's it's dangerous. It's dangerous for all of
it's
us.
It's dangerous. Yeah. Venice,
but
you're on
the other
notice
hand,
too.
If you want to make a little money, get down there and hunt pythons. I may have to do that in order to keep the show on the air because it costs so much money.
Now, Paula, in addition to fighting pythons, every week you've been, you've got vocabulary words.
Oh, I have a word this
to
week.
To share with us.
Yes. This week, the word is sesquip. Let me try it again. Sesquipedalian. Sesquipedalian.
Sesquipedalian.
Oh,
yes.
My God, it almost killed me. Yeah. It's an adjective that means measuring a foot and a half.
Yes.
Or the second meaning is having many syllables, very long.
Oh.
Or the third meaning is given to using long words.
Huh.
Yeah. Captain Culpepper was a sesquipedalian.
Oh, he used long words?
Oh, he did.
Everybody. It's our favorite denuded sock puppet.
He was a sesquipedalian.
The widow, Mrs. Culpepper. Now,
it's so nice to see you, Adam Felber.
Now, are you recently widowed, Mrs. Culpepper?
No. The captain used many syllables a long time ago. He passed quite a while ago now, Adam.
All right.
Thank you for bringing up that painful memory.
I didn't mean to make it painful, and I won't ask about any further details about the captain's demise. Although,
I appreciate that. The captain died many years ago.
Heroically, I'm sure. Let's move on.
Not heroically? It was not entirely heroically.
Well, I'm sure
he led a heroic life. He died, Adam, of a tyrotoxism.
Tyrotoxism.
Yes, that's a poison in my cheese or other dairy products.
Well, any schoolboy knows that. So I'd imagine it was a cream cheese and a bagel, right?
No, that's incorrect. It was the Gouda that got him.
Oh, that's terrible, Ms. Culpepper. Well, I'm sorry to dredge up that memory.
It was a painful memory. but I couldn't help thinking of the captain when I heard the word sesquipedalian.
Yes. Now,
it rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it?
Well, you know how I knew the word is because it's so closely related to sesquicentennial, which is a 150-year anniversary.
I didn't know that.
And you substitute the cent with the ped, which is, a root for foot. So it's a foot and a half. Sesquipedalian. Yes.
Of course.
It's a great
word.
Actually.
You know, Adam, I have had the hardest time remembering the words. I think the vocabulary word section of my brain looks like my desk. It's just piled with stuff in a disorganized fashion. So I've been trying to create a vocabulary song to bring some order to my memory.
Yeah, you have been. Let me just say, I think to limited success.
Really? So they're not sticking in your head as a result?
It's kind of just a loose and non-repeatable chant that you add a word to every week.
That's not true at all. A lot of people, if you step out of the street, you hear a lot of people singing it.
You do not.
All right, here's the best I can do. This week's word is sesquipedalian.
Oh, you're in it already.
It's an adjective meaning measuring a foot and a half. It can also mean having many syllables very long. Sometimes it's used to mean given to using long words. Last week's word was piquant. It's an adjective that means pleasantly savory. Pungent. It can also mean engagingly provocative. Also having a lively charm. The week before
that
the word was opprobrium. It's a noun meaning disgrace or reproach brought from conduct considered shameful. Looking back, we also had clack. It's a noun that means individual or organized group hired to plot a performance as in a theater. The week before that, the word was horologe. It's a noun that means timepiece as a clock. Watch or hourglass. The week before the word was probity, a noun meaning moral excellence.
Are we really doing this whole
integrity.
Song?
Another week back we had nugatory. It's an adjective that means inconsequential, worthless, having no force, inoperative. Adam didn't think it was the right word to describe the incorrectly prescribed antibiotic for my bladder infection, but she did.
Wow.
Mrs.
Wow, let's get a round of applause here.
Mrs. Culpepper.
Thank you, Mrs. Culpepper,
for
couple of,
boy, she is
now,
good.
Now, Paula, again.
You can't remember that?
No, because it's not a song. I mean,
it's
the only
a
way,
song.
The only
it's
way,
got a refrain.
What's the refrain?
She did.
I guess that's a refrain. It sounds like stuttering. But at the end now, you went almost completely monotonal.
Did I?
Yeah, you just stayed on the same note like you were the El Pollo Loco theme song or something.
This is a small studio, Adam. I can't bring my whole backup band with me.
Okay, you can't bring your full range of notes either?
I can't fit all my notes in here,
You can't fit your
Adam?
Notes in here. I'm not going to ask Harry Arlov whether that's true or not. He's just not.
Adam, answer the phone.
What?
Answer the phone.
Oh, Paula, goddammit, I don't want to answer the phone.
Adam, answer the phone.
It never goes well when I do.
The phone's ringing, for God's sake, answer it.
Hello?
Hey, Adam, it's me, Mike Bonifit. Mike Boom Boom Bonifit. So
Mike
good.
Boom
you,
Boom
you
Bonifit.
You are so right, man. She cannot sing. I don't know how you even work with her, man.
Well,
she
Mike.
I can't remember any of those vocabulary words because she doesn't sing it good, man.
I don't think you'd have remembered them anyway, Mike.
I would. I just got off my cycle. I just was riding my cycle, and I was trying to remember the words to this song. I can't do it.
Mike, how are you calling in to a pre-recorded show?
I'm sorry?
How are you calling in to a pre-recorded show? It doesn't make sense.
Well, I called. I dialed the phone.
There's no way you do, Mike. They're only up to 11 right now.
Yeah, well, I'm ahead of my time.
I guess so, Mike. Anyway, is there anything you want to say?
I really love you, Adam. You're so great, man.
Thank you, Mike.
I love watching the game with you and Chick.
We never watch the game together, Mike. We've never met.
I love watching the game with you because the thing is, man, you're always right. Like, man, bitch cannot.
Now, hey there, Mike. Mike.
Man, I don't know how you stare.
Paula Poundstone is my partner and friend.
Oh, yeah, well, you're a goddamn saint. That's what you are.
Mike, that talk is inappropriate.
Saint. Yeah. Hey, listen, man, if you want to go for, like a ride on our cycles together sometime.
A ride on our cycles together?
Yeah, my hog.
I really don't.
You don't want to go for a ride on a cycle?
For one, I don't own a cycle. And for two, I don't want to do anything with you, Mike.
I'll take you for a ride on my cycle.
I don't want to go.
We put our helmets on. Nobody will know it's two guys.
It's no, Mike. No. I'm not.
No, all you got to do is put your helmet on. Nobody will know it's two
Mike,
guys.
Why don't you go in the garage and work on your Trans Am or something?
Listen, Adam, it was good talking to you.
It wasn't good talking to you at all, Mike.
You're doing a great job. I just want to say you're doing a great job. I don't know how you put up with her.
Wow.
The next word was appropriate. Oh, man, she sucks.
Mike, come on. Stop that kind of talk there. All right, goodbye, Mike.
I'll call you when she's not there.
Please don't. Okay.
She really does. I'll call you after the game. We'll talk after the game.
No, we won't.
She really does suck.
Okay, bye, Mike.
See you later. Good talking to you, man. Good talking to you.
Jesus Christ. Now, that's Mike Boom Boom Bonifit called. That's great. Now, Paula, you've been asking for listeners to send in a vocabulary song.
Yes.
And for weeks, no one sent in a song.
Yeah.
And it's finally
been a difficult time.
Yeah.
I've had to just keep creating my own song, and there's been some criticism.
Well, from me and Mike Bonifit, there's been some.
Mike does not like my work.
I do think that you're catching some what melody there is from an old show tune called The Lullaby of Broadway.
I never saw that, so I couldn't have.
Okay, fine. So we realized that people weren't sending in vocabulary songs the way that they'd been sending in theme songs for the show.
Yeah.
Because it might be hard to, look back in our archives and realize what all those vocabulary words
were. Well, there's another reason why people didn't immediately send in vocabulary songs,
okay.
Which is my song was so powerful.
Right.
You know, it's like doing a remake of The Wizard of Oz. You know what I mean? He's just going to look bad.
Of course, Paula Poundstone, that was another reason why we received no songs. But also because there was no list of songs. But Tony Anita Hall has now gone back in our archives and posted a list of songs to our Facebook page. So if you want to write
not a list of songs. She posted
a list of our vocabulary words to the Facebook page. So if you want to write the song, now you have the whole list right in front of you. However, I do want to point out that listener Andrew Green went ahead and wrote us our very first vocabulary song.
Oh,
and
he sent
it in to us, and he sent it in just before Tony Anita Hull posted that list of words to the Facebook page.
Which proves my point.
Which is what?
He knew the words from my song. Thank you, Andrew.
That is kind of hard to conceive of, but
I'm sure that's what.
I'm
you know
not
what?
Sure that's
when I
the
put
case.
My song out on a 45,
which
Andrew,
one?
You're
it's
doing
a
the other
song
side.
Every week.
It's a growing song. It's a growing song.
That's
it develops.
Songs don't grow.
It develops.
they're
tell
written.
That to Pete Seeger.
Okay, point taken. Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because when Helix first
sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress and she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress and I sleep
so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally, and everybody just piles on it, and it's comfy, and yet when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique, and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix Sleep Quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the Midnight Lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, not right now.
And if you're going to get it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while, we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now, I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince, of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds. Yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some too. What I got is the Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy and it fits beautifully. And these are like premium pieces of clothing that are selling for like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on, and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft. and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that too. Like so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
European. They are so European. And you can get those kind of, you can get washable silk tops. You can get 14 karat gold jewelry and like all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing, they cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code. Adam, you know I have a house full of cats and a couple of big dogs. So I have this one cat who every night likes to stand in the hallway and yowl. And he has kind of a little bit like me because of allergies. I don't know why he has it, but his name is Theo and he has a really gravelly voice. So he'll, it's hard to describe it. I can't do a good impression, but it's a little dusty, gravelly voice. Okay, so earlier I was laying on the living room floor because I'm exhausted and I'm wearing a nylon fiberfilled vest. As I'm laying on the floor, Theo shoves his head through one sleeve of the vest and crawls up and is now stuck inside in between my back and the vest and is yowling because he can't get out. And then finally his head comes out the other sleeve and he goes out. What's not to love? That's what I say. What is not to love?
Which brings me to this. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program.
Your pet is part of your family, you know that already, and you want the best for them no matter what. But vet bills can really add up. Go ahead, ask me. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most.
The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. That's a lot of pets.
True.
They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are.
Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account.
To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/Paula. That's ASPCA. We spell that ASPCA. Petinsurance.com/Paula. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Anyway, Andrew Green, congratulations. You did the work and you're going to hear your song on our show. Let's listen to our very first vocabulary song from a listener.
Horologe, horologe, timepiece, watch, oh grandfather clock. I like to listen when it goes tick-tock. That horologe is making a beat that rocks. Probity, probity, moral excellence, integrity. Trump has a lot less probity than me.
Yeah.
The jailhouse is where he ought to be.
I'm feeling a need for a French horn in this song. It's beautiful. We just need a little French horn in the background.
Nugatory, nugatory, inconsequential, having no effect. Those antibiotics were nugatory for me.
Thank you, Andrew.
In treating the infection when I pee. Truckle, truckle, submit or behave obsequiously. Tom Hanks wants some petty force for treats. Truckle to him to get him to Miranda Street.
I'll not truckle to Tom Hanks.
Calumny, calumny,
it's a damnable
false
calumny
or defamatory. Trump says the hearings are a calumny. He's guilty as hell, as anyone can see.
So we've gone back to Trump here.
Exiguous, exiguous, very small in size or amount. Airline cookies are exiguous.
Yes.
Got to eat them so you won't be a sourpuss. Tyrotoxism, tyrotoxism. Poisoning from cheese or dairy products. Captain Culpepper died of tyrotoxism.
Oh.
If you ask, she'll say it was the Gouda that got him.
Wow.
That was fantastic,
Andrew Green.
Fantastic.
Andrew Green. Even Mrs. Culpepper liked it. That's great.
I'm tearing up again.
Now, I will say this. Andrew did use most of the words that you have used in your songs.
Yeah. He reached back and got a few of the oldies but goodies.
I think the only oldie the goodie I heard was exiguous.
Exiguous. Tyrotoxism's not in my list.
Well, it's in every show.
Yeah.
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 So that was fantastic,
Andrew. Thank you so much.
Listeners, if you want to send your original vocabulary song, we're at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com.
The bar is pretty high, but...
Well, the bar is now much higher than it was 3 minutes ago. You know... yards higher. Now, you know, President Lyndon B. Johnson said, "A man without a vote is a man without protection." Voting is essential to all men and women. We'll talk about voting with Professor Fernita Tolson when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Now, Paula, it's the start of an election year, and there's going to be a lot of voting going on, I hear, in 2020.
I hope so.
Oscar voting, Grammy voting.
I don't care about those votings.
There's another kind of voting coming
up. I care about the other kind, though. Yep. People better do it.
Yep, it brings to mind something H.L. Mencken wrote nearly a century ago. "As democracy is perfected, the office of president represents more and more closely the inner soul of the people. On some great and glorious day, the plain folks of the land will reach their heart's desire at last, and the White House will be adorned by a downright moron."
Wow! He said that 100 years ago?
He said that 100 years ago.
Wow!
And I just want to say, if you're out there somewhere in the ether, H.L., we did it! We did it!
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I think he nailed that one, didn't he?
Yep, he did. Now, you have some questions, because we might try to undo that damage in the near future. You have some questions about 2020, don't you?
I have questions about voting. Not only the voting in November, but voting at the conventions that determine who we'll vote for in November.
Oh, yeah, the conventions. Those are interesting sometimes. No, you have someone here who can answer all those questions. Fernita Tolson is Vice Dean and Professor of Law at USC's Gould School of Law. Her scholarship and teaching are focused on the areas of election law, constitutional law, and legal history. She's testified before the House Judiciary Committee, and her forthcoming book, In Congress We Trust, The Evolution of Federal Voting Rights Enforcement from the Founding to the Present, will be published in 2020 by Cambridge University Press. Please welcome, wow, Franita Tolson.
Wow, that's an impressive array of things.
You.
Now, you weren't able to, when you testified before the House Judiciary Committee, you didn't ignore the subpoena? It's the in thing to do now.
Everybody's doing it.
Right. I wanted to be one of the cool kids.
Okay. Yeah. Well, but you did testify. How was that?
It was an amazing experience. The universe owes me nothing. Like, you know, just the opportunity to talk about my research before people who can do something about it is an opportunity a lot of people don't get. So I was very grateful.
Yeah. Congress has never asked for my research.
What specific research were you testifying about?
So I testified about the Elections Clause, which gives the states the control of the times, places, and manner of federal elections, but is subject to Congress's authority to make or alter any state regulations.
Oh.
So it gave me an opportunity to talk about the Elections Clause, which hasn't been a source of authority that Congress has traditionally relied on.
I didn't know. So California could decide, and I think they should, that election day of the next federal election day should be on a Saturday, and they could do that subject to the override of the Congress. Is that true? Because shouldn't we have election day on a weekend?
No, they can't.
They can't?
No.
What about the Elections Clause? I believe when I testified to Congress.
Yeah, I believe you did.
So it applies to the federal elections, meaning senators and representatives.
Oh, not national elections.
Not presidential elections, okay. No.
That's interesting.
So for example, there's a lot of controversy over gerrymandering, right?
Yeah.
So,
yes.
So states can draw the lines, and Congress could theoretically change the lines for federal elections, at least as for the election of members to the House of Representatives.
Why don't they?
Because they don't want to. A lot of the members of Congress benefit from the way that the lines are drawn. Really aren't incentivized to do much about it.
I have a friend, a former comedy writer, who is now running in the Ohio 4th. He's hoping to win the primary and replace Jim Jordan,
who
a lot of people have been watching on TV in the hearings. They affectionately or unaffectionately call that district the Duck, because it is shaped like a duck, including with this incredibly long neck and then wide bill.
It's a lot of districts like that. Does your friend wear a suit jacket by any chance? Just asking for a friend.
Everybody wears a suit jacket to make up for Jim Jordan. So
apparently that's how they do a lot of the districts. Instead of just taking like a graph paper and putting it over, you know, the state and then just, you know, doing a square or a triangle, they take silhouettes of barnyard animals.
Oh. And so the Ohio 4th is drawn around a duck.
That's correct.
Well, by the way, I just want to say his name because he is running. Mike Larson, everybody.
There you go, absolutely Mike Larson.
Worthy, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know anything about Mike Larson. We could be promoting the wrong guy here.
No. He's the right guy. Trust me.
Now, all right. Who tries to stop voters?
Republicans.
Is it really that easy?
Yeah. So
is there any instance of Democratic voter repression?
So to be clear, if the Democrats were in the same position as Republicans, they probably would try to stop voters too.
Oh, really? I see what you're saying.
I was hoping we were better than that.
It's the demographics. Right?
And what ways do they?
It's not that the Democrats are better. It's just that suppressing votes turns away Democratic voters and not Republican voters.
Right. So you know the Republican electorate is aging and it's shrinking, and so they do better when turnout is lower.
So how do they stop people from voting?
So there are a number of tried and true techniques that they use. So voter purges are very common.
What does that mean?
A voter purge is where you take a name that is similar to the name of a felon or similar to the name of a dead person, and you take it off of the voter registration rolls. And so when the person shows up on election day, they're not registered to vote.
Does that mean they have to fill out a provisional ballot in some states, or is that only in some states?
In all states, because of the Help America Vote Act, they have to fill out a provisional ballot. But it's not really an effective remedy in some cases because it's after the election. A lot of people don't follow through because they usually have to go to the county board in order to make sure their vote is counted. If the election is over,
there's a lot of work.
Then it really doesn't matter. Voter ID laws are another popular way of suppressing the vote.
Wait, what? Voter ID laws?
ID laws, yes, because in some states, particularly Texas and North Carolina, which are two states who have done a very good job of keeping me in business, their voter ID laws were very restrictive. So Texas, for example, didn't allow student IDs. But you could vote if you had like a hunting license or whatever.
So, yes, I remember reading about that.
Wow.
Hunting licenses are good. good, but some student ID is not.
Right, right.
So
right.
What were they looking for then? A driver's license?
Yeah, or you know, so they want some type of official documentation. But uh-huh. a lot of voter ID laws are tailored to disenfranchise certain populations. So right. in North Dakota, for example, they required that the ID have an address on it, which a lot of people who lived on reservations, there are no addresses.
Oh, right? So, that's you know, evil.
Right.
So I'm sure that got shot down in court. Didn't?
No, I'm sorry.
Did it go to court?
It did. It went to court. Uh-huh. And it's still pending. But you had a situation where in 2018, the tribal governments were trying to print IDs with addresses, right? Trying to come up with addresses in order to make sure that their people could vote. Uh-huh. Because it's basically been upheld so far.
Wow, that's super wow. evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is super evil.
Okay, so the Voting Rights Act.
Yes.
Now, a very important portion of that was struck down by the Roberts Court, I guess, one of its first things a few years ago. What's left of it? How do we preserve it? Why is it important?
Wait a minute. Back up even further. What's the Voting Rights Act?
Okay.
Absolutely. So the Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965, and it was a really important piece of legislation. In fact, one of the most important civil rights legislations and pieces of legislation in our history, in part because it helped re-enfranchise African Americans in the South. And one of the most successful provisions of the Voting Rights Act, which was sections 4B and 5, which are the preclearance provisions. The preclearance provisions.
Preclearance.
Right. So preclearance required states, mostly in the former Confederacy. So there were some counties in California that were covered.
Right.
Portions of North Carolina were also covered, not the whole state. Uh-huh. A couple counties in Arizona were also covered. But these are areas that had extremely low voter turnout, and they used some type of device designed to disenfranchise voters. So literacy tests, poll tax, things of that nature.
Oh, wow.
And so these jurisdictions had to pre-clear any change to their voting laws with the federal government before that change could go into effect.
I remember that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that was struck down, what, I'm going to say 6 years ago?
2013, yes.
2013, 6 years
Because they said they thought they'd outgrown that, right?
Yes.
They said, we've come so far.
And it turned out the court was right, right? We have come that far, and there have been no laws, new laws that hurt voting turnout.
I'm a law professor. I don't do sarcasm. So
that one has kind of come back to bite us all in the ass, hasn't it?
It has, definitely. So since 2013, there have been a number of laws passed that are very restrictive, more restrictive voter ID laws, which I've talked about.
We just talked about, yeah.
They've closed polling places. And when I say they've closed them, we're talking like over 1,000 since 2013.
Wow.
We've had situations where states like Texas and North Carolina, my two faves, adopted really restrictive.
I thought you didn't do sarcasm. Because there's no other word for it, what you just did, but go on. I'm sorry.
All right. So wait, back up.
Yes.
I remember that the argument was that we've matured as a country, or these states, these areas had matured and they didn't need this oversight anymore. Who made those arguments?
So Shelby County is a county in Alabama who basically sued challenging the constitutionality of the coverage formula, in part because the record that Congress built in reauthorizing the coverage formula in 2006, the court found that it wasn't sufficient to justify the coverage formula, which they viewed as very intrusive of state power.
Oh, so because there weren't that many attempts, it was wasted energy, according to the courts.
So because things had gotten better, Chief Justice Roberts, who wrote for the majority, felt that Congress had to show more intentional discrimination by the states in order to justify.
And then the minute the cap comes off, there's the intentional discrimination.
Exactly.
Because they were waiting for the point where they'd be allowed to do it.
Right.
And they did it.
They did it.
Do you think that people sit at like a meeting, like the states that do these things, do you think that they have politicians that sit at a meeting and go like, okay, what are we going to do to keep blacks from voting?
Yes.
You think they actually use those words?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
And the Supreme Court has made it where they can say, what can we do to keep Democrats from voting? And the court smiles more favorably upon that, even if, you know, blacks are overwhelmingly Democratic voters.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah.
What wow. It's almost like it's a systemic problem.
Yeah.
Let's move on because I'm going to cry. Paula, you want to talk about political conventions? I understand.
Yeah. What's a superdelegate? Do they wear capes and do they rescue people?
Do they rescue delegates or regular citizens?
I don't think anyone views them as heroes. And,
superdelegate, save us! That's the right, sound of it.
No,
I don't. I have no idea. I don't even know what. Wait, I should back up even further. I don't even know what a delegate is.
Okay.
I don't understand. Because you elect the delegates too, don't you?
Yes. So the primary process. So when you vote in a primary, you're basically voting for delegates that are pledged to a candidate. And the delegates go to the national convention and they vote for the candidate whom they're pledged to.
Usually.
Super delegates are not pledged to anyone. So these are the important people in the party. The governors.
Party operatives.
The members of the DNC, for example, are super delegates. And they go to the convention. They're not pledged to anyone.
Now, is this Republican and Democrat or just Democrats?
Super delegates are just on the Democratic side.
Now, you say nobody really loves super delegates, and I think they have families and kids. But beyond that,
I said they're not heroes.
They're not. You said they're not heroes, but are they? Because I mean, aren't they there to prevent sort of like a Democratic version of a populist, intolerant demagogue from rising to the top of the ticket, like sometimes might happen in some of the other parties that we?
In theory,
yeah.
In theory, that in theory, but
it's still this idea that regular people just somehow aren't smart enough to vote.
And there,
right?
Yes, but so there's some tension between sort of this idea of the people voting in primaries, selecting delegates, deciding who the nominee should be, and then superdelegates coming in and challenging that outcome.
Right.
That can create huge party problems for the party.
Yeah.
And so what the Democratic Party did was they now superdelegates are not allowed to vote into the second ballot. Because they
What second ballot?
Well, if nobody has
just
more
when
than
I think I have a handle on it, there's a fucking second ballot.
Well, these conventions used to be really exciting because the whole party would get together and they would cast these votes, and if you didn't have like a majority,
right?
You need an outright majority, then they'd get to vote again.
Yeah,
conventions
and
used to be cool.
You keep going until you have a majority. And so superdelegates don't vote on the first ballot, and this is a way of trying to diminish their ability to affect the outcome. Now, they still can be tiebreakers, right? If things become long and protracted, they can still weigh in.
So how many votes then do they do?
It depends. Yeah, you can, if the field remains, you know, somewhat large and people stay in, you could end up with a brokered convention where you have a number of rounds.
And when was the last time that happened? Sorry, Paul.
1976 on the Republican side.
Oh.
It was a brokered convention because neither Gerald Ford nor Ronald Reagan emerged with the majority of the delegates.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right. So I've been at both a Republican convention and a Democratic convention. And
several other conventions.
No, just those.
You haven't played any other conventions? Come on. Pipe Fitters.
No, I haven't been to the Pipe Fitter convention. But my experience was that it was theater.
It is.
That it was really nothing was happening. But what about when they took out the plank? It's not really a plank, is it? What about when they took out the plank about Russia in the Republican convention? What does that mean?
So the convention is about both choosing a nominee and selecting a platform, right?
Uh-huh.
And so whoever the nominee is has a lot of control over what the platform will be.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that case in point, removing that plank is a decision made by the nominee and his supporters.
And the platform is what their intentions are
what
when they're in.
What the party stands for. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the case of the Republicans at the last Republican convention, there was some sort of last minute Paul Manafort thing to take out. What was it? It was sanctions, sanctions against Russia.
Right. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so they can it's aspirational in a sense. Right.
Uh-huh.
Because remember, we still have bicameralism and presentment. And I will explain.
What's
it. I'm sorry,
bicameralism?
You had to say bicameral.
I am so sorry.
I
don't know bicameralism.
You know what it is. So,
I know. What happened on I Love Lucy where there were two cameras shooting?
That's a multicam.
So I say that only to point out that
you say that to make me feel stupid. That's why you said it.
No.
And by the way. Boom! Hit the nail right on the head.
I can't even say the word this week. Sesquipedalian.
It's
Sesquipedalian.
Yes.
Yeah.
See.
Yeah. Bicameral, I believe, falls into that. That's a foot and a half word.
So I say that only to point out that the platform is aspirational. Right?
Uh-huh.
So
it's sort of like a New Year's resolution.
It is. That's a great way of thinking about it because policy changes that the president wants to enact, he still has to go through Congress and the procedures laid out in our Constitution. So the
and to be clear, by bicameralism, you meant two houses of Congress.
Two houses of Congress have to approve it. President has to sign it, right? So
So why did anybody give a shit? Why was there such a fuss made over the fact that they took that plank out? Why does anybody care what's in the platform if it's not real?
Well, I don't mean to suggest that it's not real, especially since I think all of this is tied to broader concerns about Russia interfering in our elections.
Yeah.
And I think it contributes to that narrative. And, you know, the platforms tell us a lot about the parties, right? Uh-huh. In 2019, can we really say we didn't know what President Trump was about in 2016? He said it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Yeah.
And the platform tells us a lot about that narrative.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know if you guys heard, but today, apparently Russia hacked Peloton.
Is Peloton. This,
seriously?
Yeah.
You mean the fashion outlet?
No, the workout. The workout bikes.
Yeah.
With the screens, they hacked it, and they are changing people's workouts.
They're changing people's workouts.
Yeah, Vladimir Putin is changing people's workouts.
To what?
Some people they're making him go slower, and some people they're making him go faster.
And why would Putin want that, Paula?
He just likes to be in control.
I feel like you've kind of vanished onto some of the crazier parts of the internet sometimes for your political reading.
No, I don't think the Ukrainians did it.
Well, I don't. Okay.
Yeah.
Russia make me skinny.
Yeah.
Come 2020, all the Republicans will be in better shape on their way to the polls. Oh, my Lord. Now, what can we do as regular people to ensure voting access for all? Because that's become something that we all get really frustrated about.
So the easy response is to say vote, right? But we focus so much on the presidential election. There are a lot of state and local elections that matter, right? These are the elections that affect our daily lives. And so it's really important to turn out in off-year elections and vote in state and local elections as well. But also, you know, people can volunteer to be poll watchers. Right.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. You can you sign up a few weeks before elections and you can monitor the polls and make sure that there's that poll workers are behaving correctly.
But you can only sign up in your area, right?
Yeah. You can only sign up in your area.
But you can also practice poll watching.
How? How, Paula? How would you practice poll watching?
Well,
how, Paula?
You can find a poll just out on the street.
Like a street lamp.
Yes, and just watch it. It's a way of practicing.
Do you want to apologize to everyone now?
All right, so you can volunteer to be a poll watcher where you go to the place where the voting takes place.
Yep.
And, but and I what feel do like you do, in my neighborhood, look at them?
Yeah, you watch them to make sure there's no irregularities.
Uh-huh. And you can report things because this information is really helpful to civil rights organizations who litigate these issues.
Now, what might a poll watcher... Now, I feel like in my neighborhood, everybody who shows up to vote gets a chance to vote, and it's all run pretty well. But in other neighborhoods...
You can also be a pole dancer. Keep that
in mind.
That's
a different thing, Paula. And that is something you can practice
that's
on
where
a street
you just,
lamp.
That's where you just dance while people are trying to vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can be a poll watcher in that context too, P-O-L-E watcher.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You absolutely could. But it's a different thing, as we were saying.
It's different.
Now, what might a poll watcher in a district where nefarious things going on, what might they see? Like just a regular layman shows up, they're watching the polls. What might they see that's worth reporting?
So there have been attempts to intimidate voters outside of polling places.
There's a certain distance that you can't do any kind of electioneering. Yeah, like you can't wear T-shirts saying, you know, Bernie or
there's
you know.
A certain distance and it varies by state. But people can still try to intimidate voters. Uh-huh. People can still give voters misinformation.
That's a big one, right?
Yeah, especially in this day and age, that's a huge one. Right. But there's also, you know, instances where poll workers have given people misinformation. You have to remember these are people who volunteer as well.
Yeah.
A lot of times they're older people. They may not be clear on the law.
Yeah.
And so these are all important things that poll watchers can observe and report.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's good to know.
A detective came and knocked on the door and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack. You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Okay, what do all these funny people have in common? Cecily Strong, Jason Mantzoukas, Duncan Trussell, Paul Scheer, Scott Aukerman, Beth Stelling, Tom Papa, Lauren Lapkus, Louis Anderson, Lisa Gilroy, Paul F. Tompkins, and Sir Patrick Stewart. They've all played characters on the hit comedy podcast Mega, an improvised satire from the staff of a fictional megachurch. The next time you're in the mood for some laughs, great guests, out-of-this-world improv and cultural commentary, we're here for you, baby. Listen to Mega anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
All trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is... Whoa! Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinevo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Now, another thing, it's touchy to bring this up, but, you know, whenever you talk to watch a panel of Republicans and Democrats together talking mm-hmm. about voting rights and stuff like that, almost always the Republicans will bring up voter fraud as a reason for things like voter ID laws. So let's talk about voter fraud as objectively as possible. Does it happen? Do people show up and vote who are not qualified to vote on purpose? Or do people show up multiple times or vote as other people? How much does that happen?
It doesn't really.
Okay, I have something to confess. Yeah. I one time said that I was Celine Dion.
She's Canadian.
She doesn't know that.
Yeah, but the people at the polling place probably did.
I said that I'm here to vote and I'm Celine Dion.
Did they let you vote?
Yeah.
So they didn't believe you is really what you're saying.
I just, maybe the one time this happened. How come they keep saying it if it's not true?
Well, it resonates.
Yeah.
Because remember, Republicans benefit when turnout is low.
Right.
And when they can pass laws that restrict the turnout.
Uh-huh.
The most common fraud is absentee ballot fraud. And so when people, for example, if people live in nursing homes and someone fills out the ballot on their behalf, that's common type of fraud.
Uh-huh.
And voter ID laws wouldn't address that type of fraud.
Okay. So the fraud that happens wouldn't get addressed by the laws that are being passed to stop it from happening?
No. No. Okay. Someone did a recent study. I think there were, since 2000, something like, I don't know, a billion ballots cast. And I think there were like 7 instances of voter fraud.
I've seen a lot of stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of Republicans.
I was one of them. So there's just 6.
Yeah, right.
I was Celine Dion.
You were never Celine Dion.
I know, but I said I was. I feel awful about it now.
You shouldn't, really.
What do they mean when they talk about a paper trail of voting? What does that mean?
So, there are quite a few.
Is that what Trump had when he was coming down the steps that time
That's
and the toilet,
toilet
paper was stuck to his foot?
Different.
That was a paper trail of voting. Paper trail of bad voting.
You can go to our website to see that photo. It's hilarious.
All right. So what do they mean when they talk about a paper trail of voting?
So it's a backup because some areas use the optical touch screen machines to vote.
Oh, Jesus, I hate
And
those
so
things.
Having a paper trail is important because there's a huge error rate with those machines.
How are votes counted then? Does somebody actually go through by hand counting?
Well, it varies by state, just like the technology varies by state.
Uh-huh.
So let's say you have a really close election. Some states provide that if the candidates are within 0.5% of each other, there's an automatic machine recount, for example. Some states provide for hand recounts in certain instances. So it really does vary by state how votes are counted.
Well, you know, I sell a remarkably soft tri polyblend t-shirt with a self-portrait on the left breast and a memorable quote on the back.
That's
true. When I bring them on the road with me, when I pack them, you know, I have to count the T-shirts. And I'm only putting like 8 of each style and size into the bag, and I still miscount. And so do the people on the other end who do the selling. So how do they, if you're counting like thousands of ballots, how do they know that the people counting them did
that
it right?
That was beautifully kitchen table, yeah. Paula. I was about to do my usual thing. It's like, how is that relevant to what we're doing? It was completely relevant.
Nice. Of course it was relevant.
We don't know, though, right?
We don't know?
No. So the estimate for the failure rate in presidential elections is 2 to 4%. Right, just in terms of ballots being not counted, uh-huh. even though they should be counted,
mm-hmm.
Or you know, other mistakes that may have been made in the counting, 2 to 4%, because we don't know.
Okay,
yeah.
But 2 to 4%, assuming that it's not nefarious miscounting, that's going to balance out over any individual state to not change the result of the election, right?
Is that an assumption?
I'm asking.
Sounded like an assumption.
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know, and I don't. I think I want to believe that.
Right.
But I don't. I've never actually read that anywhere.
Okay.
I want to sign on to it. Though.
I'm just suggesting.
It's a happy idea.
What I'm suggesting is mathematically in randomly miscounted votes. If they are randomly miscounted in a close election, the mathematically speaking, you end up with a relatively fair result. However, if somebody's got their thumb on the scale, that's where things change.
It makes me uncomfortable because of the Electoral College.
Right.
So it can't really balance out.
Why do we even have the Electoral College? I couldn't get into the Electoral College, by the way, even though I photoshopped my face on an athlete.
Yeah. Wow. That should work.
Yeah, it did for somebody.
I don't know anything about that.
So why do we have the Electoral College?
So the Electoral College is, in some ways, it's a relic of the past, right? So
it was originally, I'm sorry, you go ahead and answer.
Part of
why
the original
am I saying?
Constitution, you know, and part of the argument for having it was, so in the southern states, a substantial portion of the population was enslaved. And so they knew if there was a direct election for president, they would never be able to pick the president, right? So the Electoral College gave them a way of counting the slaves without enfranchising them, because
so they counted them, but they didn't vote,
right?
Oh,
because
wow.
Slaves counted as 3/5 of a person for purposes of apportionment to the House of Representatives, and states are accorded electors based on the number of representatives they have and senators. This is why the first six or seven presidents were from Virginia, right?
Oh,
like,
right.
Yeah,
okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, no one has a feeling that we've outgrown that.
I think everyone does, right? It's unless, you know, if you live in a state that southern states would be against any proposals to get rid of the Electoral College. Red states would be against any proposal to get rid of the Electoral College because it gives those states a built-in advantage.
Right. And small states, too, because they maintain their representation by having two senators the same as everybody else.
Yeah. So Wyoming and California have the same amount of senators, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. It is kind of ridiculous. And Rhode Island?
Two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep asking.
Yeah. What was it like being in front of the House Judiciary Committee? Did they seem like just people? Did you picture them naked? That's what...
Oh, why would she do that?
Because in the Brady Bunch, when I think one of the kids had to make a speech and they were very nervous... someone counseled them to just...
That was on a Brady Bunch episode?
Yeah.
No.
Yes, it was. The youngest son who...
Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby.
Yeah, who later had a porn problem.
Did he?
I was
Well,
not
because
going
he
there.
Kept picturing people naked, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I thought you were talking about the actor.
No.
Those kid actors always end up with some kind of problem.
No, not the actor, no. No, Bobby.
That you know
of. Bobby Brady.
Okay.
Yeah, big porn problem. All right, so Mike didn't know, and Carol had no idea. Alice knew. So were you nervous? Were you nervous talking in front of him?
I was nervous initially. It was a
And then after a while, you just sort of loosened up and threw a ball with him? What?
Yeah, I loosened up. It was, you know, I took advantage of the moment.
I would love to testify before Congress. Love to.
Yeah. I'd like to testify before Congress myself.
Yeah, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to testify before Congress.
Oh, Mrs. Culpepper.
I would very much like to testify before Congress.
Mrs. Culpepper, I'd love to see you testify before Congress.
I would wear my red sateen dress no matter what Tom Hanks says. I will not truckle to Tom Hanks.
Well, that's just wonderful, Mrs. Culpepper. We'll get back to you in a moment.
What, if you could say, what do you feel is the most important thing that people should know about all this?
Sounds so trite to just say vote, but
no, but that's really what it keeps coming down to, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. And I think it's important, and one reason we have to keep reiterating it is because people feel like their vote doesn't count.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And, you know, we really have to get over that because as long as people feel that way, if enough people feel that way, nothing changes.
Yeah.
And so it really is important to vote and vote in off your elections.
Yeah.
Right.
Although we did better the last time, right?
We did.
The last off-year election.
Democrats did well in 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep it up.
Keep it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, Paula, you've got this giant amount of information from Nick Olson. And thank you so much for it.
Yeah, thank you.
Given all this, what can you synthesize to give our listeners about voting?
House band Harry Orloff, could I have some background music for my synopsis on voting? Thank you, Professor Fran Tolson. You've got to vote. You've got to vote no matter what. I'm not a fan of football, but you've got to vote like a guy running up the field with the ball. They'll try to grab your shirt from behind with gerrymandering your district into the shape of a duck, but pull away and keep running. They'll try to tackle you by not accepting student IDs, but get a goddamn hunting license, cut left, and keep fucking running. They'll try to run you out of bounds by taking away the voting act's right of 1965, but stiff arm them and leap over them. They'll close voting places and give you misinformation, but jump over them and keep running. Vote in off your election. Study your ballot. Vote in local elections. Don't let anything stop you. Run for local office. Score!
Vernita Tolson's forthcoming book, In Congress We Trust, The Evolution of Federal Voting Rights Enforcement from the Founding to the Present, will be published in 2020 by Cambridge University Press. Thank you so much for being here on our show, Vernita.
That was fantastic.
That was just wonderful. All right, coming up, The Ballad of Captain Culpepper. That's a special treat, and we'll hear it right after this. The Cat of the Week is Tweedledee from East Lansdowne, Pennsylvania.
People listen to the news, people listen to the blues, people listen to the breeze blowing gently through the trees, people listen to their friends when they're feeling all alone, but nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. Oh, nobody listens, no, nobody listens. You can listen on your radio or even on your phone, but nobody listens to Paula Poundstone.
Yeah.
Nice.
That was just beautiful. Now, you nobody's out there might remember that. That was a submission for our theme song contest, which is still ongoing, by the way. We're still in a hunt for
taking theme songs.
But that was
a fantastic one.
We played it over a year ago. Why are we playing it tonight?
Because tonight's house band, Harry Orloff, was the creator of that theme song.
The voice that you heard, Harry Orloff, everybody. Fantastic. Over a year ago, it was one of the first entries in our theme song contest, I think. And it was just wonderful.
It holds up.
It really does.
A year later, I'm still enjoying
Chicago
it.
Chicago-style blues holds up. I mean, it has lasted a while. Now, Harry, I got to ask you, that's a real Hammond B3 organ there in the background.
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God, yeah. It just sounds fantastic. All right, but there's something else fantastic
happened. A new tune has come our way.
But it's not for our theme song contest, and goodness knows it's not for our vocabulary word contest. It's not for any contest. Now, you might remember
listener... It's for love.
It's for love. No, it's not for love either. You might remember listener Kevin Kelso, who inexplicably does love us. He wrote his theme song. He's been our house band. He submitted, without any solicitation, just a week or two
just
ago...
Just out of the blue!
Out of the blue... a ballad about Captain Culpepper. It's entitled Captain Culpepper's Last Stand.
Oh, my!
That's right. Mrs. Culpepper, I'm glad you could be here because someone
I'm so excited to hear this song.
Now, Mrs. Culpepper, I do want to warn you before we start this song that given the title, I think it might bring up some painful memories for you.
This whole show is nothing but a painful memory for me.
All right, then this probably shouldn't be any worse. Kevin Kelso with Captain Culpepper's Last Stand.
Captain Culpepper had had a distinguished career, though the branch that he served in was never really clear. When he told his darling wife his days in uniform were through, Mrs. Culpepper prepared him a big retirement due. Well, the revelry went on till the dawn's early light, but it ended abruptly with a horrifying sight. The captain's bulging eyes told everybody what was wrong: tyrotoxism from cheese that was sitting out too long.
Oh my.
And that was Captain Culpepper's last stand, the bravest soldier or possibly sailor in the land. His retirement was much shorter than he'd planned. Nobody stabbed him with a bayonet or shot him. In the end, it was the Gouda that got him. Now, the captain was well known as a fromage connoisseur. Probably smuggled in that cheese himself, the authorities concur. Fatal stuff was pretty rare, the fancy raw milk kind, the sort of thing you'd have to go to Amsterdam to find. Which led to Captain Culpepper's last stand. Yes, he was done in by his own gourmet contraband, but at least his final morsel wasn't bland. He'd still be with us now if customs would have caught him, 'cause in the end it was the Gouda that got him.
It was.
Tyrotoxism means poisoning by cheese, a very real and sometimes deadly disease. So refrigerate your Goudas and your Stilts and your Breeze to internal temperatures no more than 45 degrees. Remember Captain Culpepper's last stand. He choked to death on a swollen salivary gland. If he'd only had an EpiPen at hand, he could have jabbed it in his heart just like they taught him. But in the end it was the Gouda that got him. Yes, in the end it was the Gouda, not a shark or a barracuda. Tyrotoxism's no joke, look it up on your computer. In the end it was the Gouda that got him.
That was so moving.
Oh, Ms. Culpepper.
So moving, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Ms. Culpepper, was that accurate towards what happened?
That was exactly what happened.
That's how it happened.
Kevin captured the moment.
I wonder how he did that, because he wasn't there, was he?
He wasn't there. He must, I don't know, maybe read it in the paper.
No, that's quite, so it was a sort of big affair. It was a party.
It was a huge party and a terrible loss.
And now there is some question as to what branch of the service the captain was in. We haven't been able to narrow that down, and with all your many appearances on the show, Mrs. Culpepper.
He was a military man.
Okay.
He was in the military.
Okay. That's as specific as he ever got with you? Or?
He went with any branch that needed him.
Well, I don't think that's
possible. He was special forces.
All right.
Adam Felbert.
Uh-oh.
French Trump.
Oh, French Trump, our other hand puppet.
Soon has to be Rudy Giuliani. Come, my friend, sit with me on this bus bench for a moment.
Oh, a park bench for a moment with Rudy
Giuliani? Bus bench.
Bus bench. Bus bench. Got it.
Oh, here comes the bus, Rudy.
Uh-oh.
Stand up and lean over.
I dropped a quarter.
Oops, Rudy. So sorry.
So, French Trump, are you fixing to throw Rudy Giuliani under a bench?
I am throwing Rudy Giuliani under a bat.
Now, why is that?
I am thinking of a mean name for you, Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, one of your trademark nicknames.
I've thought of a mean name for you, Adam Felbert. Ooh. Adam Felbert, the welder.
The welder?
Oui.
So Felbert the welder.
That's right. That's right. You feel the sting of my mean name.
I don't even see how it's mean. We, in fact, had a professional welder on our show.
Aha!
And he was a lovely gentleman.
Adam Felbert, the well dare. I will not stop saying it to you, Adam Felbert. The bringing of impeachment to President Donald J. Trump is a congressional opprobrium.
Opprobrium? Oui. An act of congressional opprobrium is what you meant to say, I think.
I said what I meant, Adam Felbert, the welder.
Oh, ow, that stings. Wait, don't call me that name.
You will feel the sting of my mean name, Adam Felbert.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you didn't show up for our entire voting section, which took up the bulk of this show.
I showed up now to discourage people from voting.
Why would people be discouraged having heard you? I mean, I don't understand what you're...
Because now... I'm telling people, do not listen to that professor or to Paul Poundstone. Nobody listens to Paul Poundstone. People listen to, French Trump. Do not vote.
Oh, that's your message.
Yeah, that's my message.
Okay.
That's my message.
Your message. No. Oh, ew.
Do not vote.
That's not
Adam
working.
Adam Felbert, the well there.
Ouch. Again, not sure what that insult is, but I can tell you mean it in a mean way.
It is a stinging rebuke.
All right, well, French Trump, I have to wonder why you're throwing Rudy Giuliani under a bus.
Because he knows where the bodies are buried.
Where are they buried?
In Deutsche Bank.
I got you to tell me, just like that.
Adam Felbert, they went down. No one listened to you.
Okay, well.
No one believes you.
I know they don't.
You know nothing. You're a crazy man. You are, there's something wrong with you, like Shifty Schiff.
Shifty Schiff?
Yeah, Shifty Schiff. There's something wrong with him.
Yeah.
Impeachment is a disgusting word to me.
I'm sure it is. It's not even pronounced like that, you know.
What? Impeachment.
It's impeachment.
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 I am French Trump.
Uh-huh. Again,
I'm French Trump. It is impeachment.
Can I talk to Paula, French Trump?
Yeah, Adam, what can I do for you?
Well, I hear you're going to be on the road, Paula.
Oh, I am. I am. I love being on the road, but I hate self-promotion.
Right, I know you do. And so we've decided as a group we're going to skip that at this point.
I'll be in San Fran on New Year's Eve at the Sidney Goldstein Theater, formerly the Norse. And on February 29th, I'll be in Dallas, Texas at the Winspear Opera House.
Dallas, Texas?
Yeah.
That's a good place.
Yeah.
I've been there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Big hats, big hair.
Big hats, big cattle. Now, at those events, Paula, are you going to have Paula Poundstone's pussy pillows available?
I do have Paula Poundstone's pussy pillows, which are a homemade cat toy stuffed with catnip,
right.
With a cat joke on one side and on the other side. And by the way, a grommet, in case you want to tie a string to it and pull it for your cat.
But you don't go ahead and tie a string to it. That's extra.
I'm not tying a string for you. Jeez.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
It just seems like that should be an accessory. That would be a really...
No, but the grommet is there.
Yeah, but you could include a piece of string for virtually nothing.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of work for me.
But you could just tie it to
a string. Get the string. There's a cat joke on one side, and the other side is pristine and empty, just waiting for me to autograph it to your cat.
Really?
Yeah.
People. Okay. Now you've been selling a lot of these, right?
They've been flying
off the
shelf.
Wendell's had to be like sitting there sewing like a sweatshop.
Wendell has made a factory out of my son's old room.
And how many have you sold so far, like in total, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. Many.
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 Now, yeah. And you unapologetically now build them as Poundstone's pussy pillows?
Not unapologetically, but I do
That's the
build
best
them
name
as
we have so
Poundstone
far.
Pussy pillows. Yeah.
Well, I'm quietly proud that I came up. Now yeah. I'm loudly proud that I yeah. came up with
yeah.
that.
Yeah, no, it's a very clever name.
I thought I was being just sort of a rascal in the moment, but it seems like nobody's bothered to rename them.
No one can think of them any other way than Poundstone Pussy Pillows.
Okay. Do you have a sign for them yet?
No.
I think that's the next
yeah.
step.
Yeah.
You might want to
think
about
that.
Well,
you gotta earn the money to put the money in. You know what I mean?
Last question about the pussy pillows. Yes. Are they available yet on your website?
They are not, because that would require Wendell... mailing them to people, and it's just going to shove him over the edge.
he's got pillows to sell.
Wendell can't take one more thing.
Is that why there's no strings tied to those grommets?
I asked Wendell to get the strings. He wouldn't do it.
Okay. Well, that explains a lot then. Okay, so if you want the pussy pillows, you got to come to her shows. If you want to come to her shows, you can find out about all her upcoming performances at paulapoundstone.com. We'll be back right after this. According to climate scientists, we have 10 years and 5 weeks until the Earth begins to become uninhabitable.
Hello there, ghouls and gals. It is I, April Wolf. I'm here to take you through the twisty, scary, heart-pounding world of genre cinema on the exhilarating program known as Switchblade Sisters. The concept is simple. I invite a female filmmaker on each week, and we discuss their favorite genre film. Listen in closely to hear past guests like The Babadook director, Jennifer Kent, Winter's Bone director, Deborah Granick, and so many others every Thursday on MaximumFun.org. Tune in if you dare.
It's actually a very thought-provoking show that deeply explores the craft and philosophy behind the filmmaking process while also examining film through the lens of the female gaze. So, like, you should listen.
Switchblade Sisters.
Hi, I'm Renee Colvert.
I'm Alexis Preston.
And we're the hosts of the smash hit podcast, Can I Pet Your Dog? Now, Alexis.
Yes.
We got big news.
Uh-oh.
Since last we did a promo, our dogs have become famous.
World famous.
World, like...
stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Second big news.
Mm-hmm.
The reviews are in.
Mm-hmm.
Take yourself to Apple Podcasts. You know what you're going to hear? We're happy.
It's true.
We're a delight, a great distraction from the world.
I like that part a lot.
So if that's what you guys are looking for, mm-hmm. you got to check out our show. But what else can they expect?
We've got dog tech, dog news, celebrities with their dogs, all dog things.
All the dog things. So if that interests you, well, get yourself on over to Maximum Fun every Tuesday.
On this day in unremarkable history, Louisa May Alcott said, "Big girls, how's that sound for a title?"
Welcome back, all you nobodies. Now, Paula, I guess we're at the end of the show, because this is the part of the show where in most weeks you offer up some message to the fans.
I have a message.
Oh, but we ran out of time.
No, no.
Anthony, we're out of tape, aren't we?
No, I don't think so. I think there's still time.
Okay.
Adam, I think I speak for both of us when I say that we love doing this show. And I know that our fans love it, because just the other day, in the restroom in the Bangor, Maine airport, a woman said to me, "Could you move? I'm trying to get a paper towel." But I knew that what she meant was, I'm such a fan of Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Oh, that's psychotic.
It's so good to laugh and learn a little something. I feel like I'm right there in the tiny studio with you. And Adam is wrong about your Tri-Poly Blend t-shirts. They are remarkably soft.
I think she was just asking for the paper towels.
No, no. The problem is that we can only keep making the show if we increase the number of listeners that we have. And, of course, the best way to do that is by word of mouth, each listener telling their friends and family that they enjoy the show.
So our message is, listeners, if you're out there, tell your friends and family.
Well,
let's move on.
No. Unfortunately, Adam, here's what you don't realize. Many people find this an awkward conversation. So I have written some simple sample dialogue to break that ice. Try this. Listener, I'm glad we get a chance to walk and talk. Now that you're way out here in Santa Monica, I hardly ever see you. What a quaint neighborhood of latte vendors and boutique shops. Boy, the woman in that napkin store sure got upset when you asked if they had placemats. Jesus, that's a weird-looking dog. Listener's friend, it's a great Chihuahua, a Great Dane Chihuahua mix. A lot of people here have them now. There's a clothing store for them on the next block. Listen, congratulations on your show. It's fantastic. Move over, Lin-Manuel Miranda. Making a musical version of Shawshank Redemption makes Hamilton look pedestrian. I mean, songs like "Welcome to Shawshank," "You Can Hear the Bars Clank," "You Shouldn't Have Thrown the Gun in the Lake," "That Was a Mistake," "New Fish, New Fish, New Fish." "Now You're in Here with Us," "No More Asparagus." I mean, who thinks of stuff like that?
No more asparagus.
Listener, thanks. This store must be going out of business. They only have one shirt. Listener's friend, no, this store's been here for years. They only sell one shirt. And I think you made the right choice, having the attacker's first approach in the shower scene be really upbeat. Everyone needs a friend in here. I could be your friend in the end. It's not love, it's a violent shove. Your musical
Jesus.
Is more popular than the movie ever was because you didn't let it get dark. And the finale, when they sprinkle brown water in the audience and Andy sings, "Shit, shit, shit, I'm crawling through, shit, 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 I'm crawling through, shit, shit, shit," it's triumphant. How did you ever think of it? Listener, well, there's something I never told you before. Listener's friend, you're gender fluid? listener. No, I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. I'd tell you that. What I didn't tell you is that I listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast. I wanted to tell you, but it felt awkward. See, Adam?
Oh, I see.
Listener's friend, and Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, taught you how to make Shawshank Redemption into a musical? Listener, no. It's just that it's such a funny, creative show. It's been so good to see Adam grow close to Mike Boom Boom Bonifit. It just fires my imagination.
That's not even close to true.
Listener's friend, wow. I'm going to listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, too. Do you want to get a latte? Listener, sure. Listener's friend, remember when you order, they don't have whipped cream. It's consequenced cream.
Oh, wow, Paula.
Yeah. That's this could be helpful.
In no way to anybody. I mean, it's
two friends walking through Santa Monica.
Yeah, but it's like some kind of
talking about one friend's success with the musical Shawshank Redemption.
Exactly. And if that situation comes up, I guess you'd...
We've got another listener. It's one listener at a time, Adam. That's how you do it.
But why is Santa Monica so Fellini-esque in your vision here with stores that sell one t-shirt and Great Dane Chihuahua mixes and stuff like that.
That's exactly what it's like up on Montana Street. It's exactly what it's like.
You know what? To be fair, you live there and I don't. So, Paula, I hope if this does happen in your neighborhood of Santa Monica that,
exactly
that it unfolds
like.
Exactly like this and we get one more listener.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, nobody's remember, if you are one of our listeners and you want to get in touch with us, our email address again is nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com.
And you can find me and Adam on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can find my remarkably soft tri-polyblend t-shirts with the self-portrait on the left breast and the memorable quote on the back at paulapoundstone.com.
Yeah, you can. That's our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. It's hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam the Felber. Produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Technical direction by Ray Horseman. Sound engineering by Anthony Alfaro. And mixing by Michael Hoagie. Special thanks to tonight's house band, Harry Orlov. Yes, and thanks to our guest, Franita Tolson. Security muscles provided by Tyler, the Studio City behemoth, Burke. Transcription services for this show provided by TranscribeMe. For your special Paula Poundstone discount, use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
Savoy. Are you weeping softly, Mrs. Culpepper?
Adam Felber. See well there.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.